This hour is a busy hour. My name is Jim Rome, and the program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. By Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. It's busy because I've got Will Brinson coming up next segment, John Morosi coming up after that. And as we start hour number two, I have to reset what happened at the end of hour number one. I'm not proud of this fact. If you notice, look, I'll be accountable for it. I'll be responsible for it. It is my show. You are my clones. This is my listening audience. It is happening during my show. My name's up on the marquee. So I can't shirk responsibility here. But man, you clones, you listeners, JTP, man, you're harsh. Always looking to go in on somebody. I'm not leading this charge. I'm not looking to get this guy's head on a stick and run it up on the hill. There was a misunderstanding at the end of last hour. I mentioned that I had a conversation with author Ben Mezrich about his book, The Bitcoin Billionaires. And I mentioned that I never had any interest or even any understanding. And in fact, I still don't have an understanding, which prefaced why I made the comment. I do not have an understanding of cryptocurrency or Bitcoin. But that did not stop me from buying a small piece of a Bitcoin. So I put it out there to you listeners and said, do you know Bitcoin? Do you understand it? Do you track it? Do you follow it? Do you have a fundamental understanding? Can you help me out? Do you have any advice? So when I said, is there anybody who knows anything about Bitcoin? A coin collector called me up to give me advice and ask me if I had a pen and I was writing it all down. Dave in Lake Tahoe. It's good to have you, Dave. How are you?
I have some advice for coin collecting.
Yeah.
Can I tell you about it?
Yeah, please. What do you got?
Don't buy any cleaned coins. Do you want to write it down?
No, I got my pen out. I am writing it down. Why do I not want clean coins?
Because they don't grade. You want to get your coins graded. That's what makes money worth it. Okay? I have two grading societies you can use, okay? PCGS, Professional Coin Grading Society.
PCGS. All right, so let me ask you this now, Dave. I mentioned cryptocurrency, and you're giving me advice on coin collecting. Are you and I talking the same language? Are we talking about the same sport?
I'm talking about coin collecting. I'm not talking about any Bitcoin. I don't understand computers.
Now, notice I did not rush in to pile on this guy. I just didn't. It's fine. That's his thing. This was my question. There was a misunderstanding. It happens. However, that did not stop all of you for rushing in to kill this guy. Not me, because I didn't care. I understood that he misunderstood. Not y'all. As an example, Hedstrom Bacon, Dave, write this down. You're a loser.
Do you want to write it down?
Did you get that? Hey, Bacon, why is he a loser? He's a coin collector. He has a knowledge of that. That's his thing. He tried to help me. He thought that I needed advice on coin collecting. Why does that make him a loser? Dude, you're harsh.
Don't
why are you so angry, man?
Coins.
Zach in San Diego tweets, war, beach, metal detector, headset wearing, socks and sandals guy. Hey, Zach, how do you know that doesn't pay? There's no way guys would do that and invest in that equipment if it didn't pay. Metal detector guy has definitely pulled rings, Rolexes, who the hell knows what out of the sand. Pauly T. Wall tweets, 100% chance Dave has a doomsday plan and bunker. Maybe he knows something we don't know.
I don't understand computers.
Doesn't understand computers. That might be something you want to understand. Like, I don't understand Bitcoin, but I do have a fundamental understanding of computers. Namely, I can work a computer. Keithertons tweets, war a coin collector calling into Rome when he's talking about Bitcoin, and then the caller being confused and saying, I don't know computers. That did just happen.
I don't understand computers.
That is actually pretty funny. I asked for advice on Bitcoin, and a guy called to give me advice and then said, I don't understand computers.
I'm talking about coin collecting. I'm not talking about any Bitcoin. I don't understand computers.
Matt in Vancouver tweets, Dave sounds as lucid and sharp as someone who collects coins should sound.
Okay. Is that helpful?
If Bruno Garrett 1 tweets, Jim, PGCS, PGCS, please get a call screener.
PCGS.
Dave tweets, no way Coin Guy was not a troll. Well, I don't know. That sounded pretty legit to me. There's a million trolls trying to hook us. But I don't think he's one of them. That guy sounded legit to me.
You want to write it down?
Hey, Jim, please get a new phone slap. This caller was horrible. RG in Peoria. He wasn't. He just was confused. He was not horrible. And the problem with me getting a new phone slap, that would require me getting a new EP. Phone slaps are easy to find. EPs, not so much. Hey, Rome. Buy all the Bitcoins you can. They will take off soon. Signed, Microsoft Bing. Steven PHX, you know I'm an Apple guy. All right, then. Y'all had your fun. We done with that? Can we move on from Coin Guy? I said Bitcoin, not coin collecting. But if I ever start coin collecting, I will collect clean coins. Now I know. 1-800-636-8686. All right, so the category is pop culture phenoms. Here is your clue. This legend from Las Vegas ended a streak of 32 Jeopardy games in a row last night and walked off the set in Culver City with $2,464,000 in winnings. Thanks, Alvy. You've got 10 seconds, clones. Good luck with it. The answer, who is James Holzhauer, a.k.a. Jeopardy James, arguably the biggest pop culture phenom of 2019 thus far, which is pretty amazing because Jeopardy is not exactly a show known for creating pop culture phenoms. That's more of a kick your feet up, take your teeth out kind of a program. But Jeopardy James cuts through all the usual target demos of a pre-taped trivia show. And that's because he was an unrelenting wood chipper who embarrassed his opposition on a nightly basis and stacked cash from the floor to the ceiling in record time while doing so. And when this guy burst onto the scene some 33 shows ago, he brought a professional sports gambling acumen with him. That's what made this guy interesting to me. He literally flipped that game upside down by working from the bottom of the board and taking on the most lucrative and challenging clues first, while finding the majority of the daily doubles and risking enormous amounts of money when he did so. Like, this guy came at it from a totally different way. Came at it from a totally different angle. I mean, it's one thing to find the daily doubles and then have the stones to bet tens of thousands of bucks when you do so. But it's another thing to know the answers almost every single time, which he did. Like, it's not like Jeopardy James was squeaking out victories either. This guy had nearly every single game in the bag before the first commercial break. You know how demoralizing it must have been for those other two nerds, geniuses, who every night had to know that they lost before Trebek even had the chance to wander over to the podium to lob them some mundane questions that nobody cared about in the first place during the interview segment of that program. It must have been like the kind of fear that people had when they stepped between the ropes to fight Mike Tyson when he was 21, when the fights were over before they got in the ring. Here's the sickest stat of all. from that amazing run. Of the 32 games this guy won, 16 of them became the top 16 single-day scores of all time. Meaning, if you look at the list of most money won on a single Jeopardy show ever, exactly half of his totals make up the top 16 spots. But here's the real kick in the junk. Even though Holzhauer won 2.4 mil plus, the exact number, $2,464,216, he still came up short, 56K, of the all-time mark set by Ken Jennings. Now, most people view the all-time money mark as a mere formality that Holzhauer was going to easily eclipse, like he was going to blow right by Jennings. In fact, not only go by him, but like double him up. And why? Because it took Jennings 74 shows to get to 2.5 mil, and it took Holzhauer 32 shows. But after losing last night, Jennings is still the all-time record holder for money won. And considering it took 15 years for anybody to get anywhere near his money record, and less than halfway to his consecutive game streak, safe to say no one's ever going to run down Jennings or run him off either one of those thrones. And the strangest part about last night was not that Holzhauer lost. The strangest part was having it spoiled in the early hours of Monday morning. And it wasn't somebody on staff who leaked the video. The information came out because Jeopardy actually airs at 9:30 in the morning in some parts of the program or in the country. The hell is that? What kind of market is airing trivia at 9:30 in the morning? Morning game show time slots are reserved for showcase showdowns and spins of an oversized giant wheel with super excited contestants, not super brainy nerds, or in this case, a stud sports gambler. No, it's for the other thing. Oversized wheels, super excitable contestants, warnings about getting your pets spayed and neutered. That's what the morning's for. But you combine social media and national interest and different airtimes for Jeopardy nationwide, and then all of a sudden the entire country knows. No matter how hard you tried not to know, then you knew. So Holzhauer may have come short of an all-time money record by less than 2% of a grand total, but his legacy will be turning a pre-recorded game show with a target demo of 65-year-olds into appointment TV for all ages. And more than that, he got me to do my first take on Jeopardy ever, where I was not clowning a bunch of contestants for whiffing on a sports category.
Football 200.
Your choice, do or don't name this play in which the quarterback runs the ball and can choose to pitch it to another back. It's an option play. Ryan?
Football 400.
I can tell you guys are big football fans.
Yeah, yeah.
Tom Landry perfected the shotgun formation with this team. Dallas Cowboys. Do you think we should go to commercial? Ryan?
Take it on to 600.
Okay, by signaling for one of these, a returner can reel in a kick without fear of getting tackled. Fair
catch.
Who is
Parker?
Two clues left, Ryan.
800.
These penalties are simultaneous violations by the offense and defense that cancel each other out. And they are called offsetting penalties. Let's look at the $1,000 clue, just for the fun of it. Jimmy?
As Minneapolis's U.S. Bank Stadium prepares to host Super Bowl 52, I'm looking at the Ring of Honor with names from this defensive line that took the Vikings to four Super Bowls.
Who is Parker?
If you guys ring in and get
Parker?
This one, I will
Parker.
Die. Who are the purple people? Eaters. We're going to take a break.
See you in the Tournament of Champions, Jeopardy James. Hey, we spared Kareem that time, didn't we? Who is Parker? When we come back, Will Brinson. Talking to some NFL. Are you finding it tougher and tougher to get to the grocery store? Then let Walmart do it for you. Just make your list, set a time for free pickup or delivery, then go about your day. Walmart Associates will pick the best items for you, including fresh produce. They'll get it ready. It's quick. It's easy. It's convenient. With satisfaction guaranteed, or you get your money back. Just download the Walmart grocery app to get started and then use my code, WOWFRESH. 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 And get $10 off your first order. It is just a $50 minimum purchase. It does not expire until December 31st of 2019. There is a small fee which applies. Use my code WOWFRESH and download the Walmart grocery app to get started.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Podcast Tuesday. Jim Rome Podcast. Later on today, this week's guest, Rex Chapman. Rex Chapman. RC is doing the podcast. Looking forward to getting caught up with my man Rex. So that's coming up a little bit later on today. Look for it. If you're already subscribed, it will find you. If not, you're going to have to find it that one time and then subscribe. The interview portion of this show begins right now. We are joined by a senior writer for CBS Sports, host of the Pick 6 NFL podcast, friend of this program, also a fan of Pressure Luck, as am I. Will Brinson joins us. Will, it's good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, doing awesome, man. Hope you're doing well.
Dude, I'm doing great. It's great to hear your voice. Will, thanks so much. Let me start with this and get it out of the way. Let me get something out of the way, and that is Rob Gronkowski is trying to get this out of the way. Will, he announced his retirement back in March, but the thinking had been he just wants a little bit of time off, and then he'll be back Sunday. Will, he said, quote, whatever I say, it doesn't matter. It'll always be crazy out there. You can put him to rest, end quote. So what do you make of that? Is Gronk officially retired now?
I think Gronk's done, Jim. I mean, here's the thing. He went out on top. You know, he won a Super Bowl. He is probably, in my opinion, and you can certainly make the case, the greatest tight end of all time. He's going to be a surefire Hall of Famer, I think. The Hall of Fame committee gets mad if you say that. He made millions of dollars, and he's going to, like, slide right into some WWE acting, like, The Rock-style career. And I think he's probably spent the last few months enjoying his life without fear of having to go back to OTAs. And he got out while he's fairly healthy, without any major damage to his back and to his body, 30 years old. I think this is it. You know, there's too much money to be made in entertainment. I know that there's going to be stuff floated about him coming back. I think that's primarily because his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, would love to get some more money from the Patriots and line his own pockets. And I get it. I mean, look, it makes sense from a business perspective. But I just think Gronk has done to deal with playing football and all the things that go along with it. And he gave it his maximum effort down the stretch, won the Pats the title, walked out a champion, and now he gets to go, like, you know, suplex some dudes in WWE.
I agree. Will Brinson joining us, CBS Sports senior writer and the host of the Pick 6 NFL podcast. All right, so let me keep you in the AFC East. You were all over Adam Gase's eyes in his introductory presser nearly 5 months after he was hired. What do you make of his offseason and the Jets' offseason?
It's weird. I think it's two separate things, right? I think Adam Gase's offseason has been unnecessarily headline-y. And way too many people are talking about him. You don't want people talking about your team the way that people are talking about the Jets, right? I mean, they're talking about them in the fashion of, all right, they fired their GM after he spent millions of dollars in free agency. He's battling with his coach. The coach is the interim GM. The coach doesn't like Le'Veon Bell. All these headlines are the type of distractions you want to avoid if you're the Jets. I mean, when you talk about the team in the AFC East that has been, you know, the standard bearer for how to handle this stuff, it's the Patriots, and they don't let these things, you know, become an issue. I mean, they just don't year to year. And the Jets are seemingly, it's like the Jets got mad that the Giants stole the title of most dysfunctional New York franchise. And said, we got to get this back. How do we pull this off? And they did a really good job of it. You know, I think from a football perspective, even though I don't like the cost involved with Le'Veon Bell, the cost involved with C.J. Mosley, I think you can make a case that what the Jets did overall was a really nice job in terms of building out their roster. I mean, they added Le'Veon Bell and Jamison Crowder as short yardage pass catching weapons for a second year quarterback in Sam Darnold. I mean, he's going to fit perfectly with those guys, and he's going to fit perfectly with, you know, what Adam Gase's system offers in terms of similarity to routes that, that he threw at USC. Defense is expensive. They've dumped a bunch of money into it, a bunch of high ground picks, but it's a, it could potentially be a good defense, and we're hearing good things about it from what Greg Williams has done so far. So I think the Jets can contend in the AFC, but they got to get this business off the field out of the way.
Will Brinson joining us once again. All right, Will, let me ask you about Gerald McCoy signing with the Carolina Panthers. That just went down. How do you like that fit for him and for the team?
Had a really interesting discussion on my podcast. It's daily. You can subscribe on iTunes with Jordan Rodriguez of the Charlotte Observer. It's actually out today. And so she had sat down with Ron Rivera previously, and basically Rivera realized this offseason that if he doesn't take control of his defense and he doesn't get it back to the level that, that it's been at for several years before the departure of all these coordinators, whether it's Sean McDermott or Steve Wilkes out the door, then he's probably going to lose his job. And I think he understands that being multiple and being versatile is really key. And so what you're going to see from the Panthers this year with Gerald McCoy, Kawan Short, and Don Terry Poe are a bunch of three-man fronts. And then they're going to have these linebackers, you know, Shaq Thompson, pass rushers like Bruce Irvin and Brian Burns, the rookie they drafted in the first round. And then you're going to have a, you know, they're going to be flying off the edge, and you're going to have a guy like Luke Kuechly roaming free in the middle because McCoy and Short and Poe can lock up defenders. And they're going to be able to sort of morph into something different when they need to against various opponents. And so in, at least in Ron Rivera's mind, what this is a defense with McCoy that gives him so much more versatility because of his ability against the run, his ability to rush from the inside if he needs to. And that's why the Panthers, you don't see this much, Jim. I mean, they maybe Eric Reed they did it with, but, I mean, they don't spend big on free agents. You know, the last real time they spent big on a free agent was back in, like, 2011 when Jerry Richardson wanted to make himself look like less of a jerk to the players. So he had Marty Herney go out there and make it rain in free agency and sign Charles Johnson for like $80 million. They're just not big spenders, but they were one of the big spenders when it came to going after McCoy. I think the price tag is, you know, it's high, but it's a 1-year deal, $8 million up to $10.5 million. I like the move by Carolina because this is a franchise from the quarterback to the coach to the GM that knows that they're all in 2019 if they want to keep their jobs.
Big, big swing. And you have to think a lot of that's going to come down to Cam Newton and his shoulder. Will, before you go, let me ask you about the Cleveland Browns. Now, I'm going to be honest. I'm not just driving that Browns bandwagon. I built that thing on the NFL Today back in week 5 last year before they beat the Ravens in overtime. That said, they have become the hottest team in the NFL, but you were not exactly fired up about them. Why not?
I mean, I'm catching flack for this, Jim, and I feel bad because, look, I think that if you built if I were building, I don't know about the perfect quarterback, but a quarterback that I want to cheer for more than any other quarterback I've ever seen before, it might be Baker Mayfield. Everything about him on field, off field is just wildly entertaining about the way he approaches the game, the way he approaches life. I want the Browns to win big. I am just a little worried that the hype has gotten to be too much for Cleveland. I was on the Browns Daily podcast at the Combine, and we were talking about it, and basically, if Cleveland does anything worse than 9-7, it's going to be considered a colossal disappointment for that franchise. And that's a pretty high bar, considering they've won, eight games in the last 3 years. I mean, it's asking for a pretty big leap. I get it. You go out and get Odell Beckham. You sign guys like Sheldon Richardson. You invest, you know, all over the roster. You've got this, you know, young quarterback who, in my opinion, Baker should have been the rookie of the year. You got Jarvis Landry, David Njoku, Antonio Callaway, tons of weapons on offense. Nick Chubb, budding superstar. A couple of points I'd worry about, though. I think the offensive line, you know, they're starting Greg Robinson at left tackle. That's not an ideal scenario. I worry a little bit about how that line is going to cohese. And then Freddie Kitchens, who I'm all in on. I'm buying Freddie Kitchens. I love his personality and his football acumen. But he is a first-year head coach, and there is a transition there. No matter, you know, how good you might be as a positional coach or a coordinator, there's a transition. And so I think the Browns have to be careful because if they stumble out of the block, you know, it could be a more competitive AFC playoff race this year, and I don't think you can guarantee a wild card. I love the Browns. I just think I'd go under on the total.
Will Brinson joining us, a CBS Sports senior writer, host of the Pick 6 NFL podcast. Very good friend of the program, too. Will, appreciate you. Great to have you back, man. Thanks so much. We'll do it again soon.
Take it easy, man.
You got it, Will Brinson. Hey, listen. You know, that's all logical. I can't dispute some of his concerns, per se, except that I do not share those concerns. I am all in. That is America's team with America's coach and America's quarterback. Crazy skill offensively, great talent in playmakers, flying to the football defensively. Sure, the expectation's a thing. It's a real thing. I just trust that you've got the right coach and the right leadership in that locker room to manage that expectation. And when things do not go well, if they don't go well, they're going to hold together. There'll be accountability in that locker room. I love them. That season cannot get started soon enough. Injury, to me, is the only thing that can disrupt that team or get them knocked off the path. 1-800-636-8686. When we come back, talk some baseball and some hockey. And who knows, man? John Morosi can pretty much cover anything. Fox Sports baseball and NHL Network analyst John Morosi joining me next. Next hour, we talk Tampa Bay Rays baseball with Austin Meadows. Also, before the end of the program, some Seattle Mariners baseball. I've got a player profile for the Smack-Off. Today, Mike in Indy is our guy. If you're late to it, wish the flight deck, James Kelly, a happy 40th birthday, because 40 years ago today, a legend was born.
That's right.
Time for a sports update. Here is your bottom of the hour. Look at things.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Once again, a Smack-Off player preview. Mike in Indy coming up later on. Plenty to cover, but as promised, we're joined right now by somebody who works with MLB Network, NHL Network, Fox Sports, MLB Network Radio, a man who can break down why the Upper Peninsula is part of Michigan. He is a friend of the program. Remember, NHL Network is going to have live coverage before and after every game of the Stanley Cup Final. You can catch our guest, John, on the call for the Yankees-Indians this Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern with Matt Vasgersian and Tom Verducci on MLB Network Showcase. He is a very busy man, as always. John Morosi is joining us right now. John, good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, my friend, it is great to be with you, as always, at any time of year, but most especially this one between the Cup Final going on, MLB, we got the Showcase game on Friday. I truly cherish this time of year. It is one of my absolute favorites of the whole calendar.
In fact, John, you answered my question. I was going to say, what with the MLB draft, Stanley Cup final, college baseball super regionals, Dallas Keuchel, Craig Kimbrell bidding season, I know this is the very best time of year. I'll get to baseball in a minute, but you were in St. Louis over the weekend to cover the Cubs and the Cardinals. As somebody who loves hockey, how would you describe the mood in that city?
Outstanding. And Jim, to me, this is, of course, the first time that, actually over the weekend, was the first time that we ever saw that great Cubs-Cardinals rivalry happening at the same time as a Blues Stanley Cup Final game. And of course, the Blues' first trip to the Cup Final in nearly a half century. So, great hockey town, great baseball town, really adds to the flavor, I think, and the enthusiasm that it's so close together. Only six blocks separate Enterprise Center, where the Blues play, from Busch Stadium. And from having covered the Western Conference Final for NHL Network during the previous round, and, of course, having most of my background professionally being in baseball, it was really interesting to me to see Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina coming to the Game 6 clincher in the Western Conference Final, and just that really unique support that goes both ways. And we've seen a lot of Blues players come to Cardinals games the last couple months. So I think there really is a unique bond that exists between the two fan bases. And the two teams themselves. I mean, it's pretty unique and pretty special. So and I think in the case of the Blues, they really, Jim, embody the mentality of the city exceptionally well. A blue-collar place. Ryan O'Reilly, saw him a huge game last night with two goals and really be the difference maker. He's come on and really added a lot of credibility and veteran savvy to that dressing room, and certainly what we're seeing on the ice for the Blues. So he is a very easy player, I think, for St. Louisans to like. and much like a lot of the players in the Cardinals team. So it's a pretty special time to be covering sports, either sport, I believe, in St. Louis right now.
Great series, great story, great for that town. John Morosi joining us. All right, John, last time you and I spoke, it was the end of April. We talked about Cody Bellinger, and we talked about his start to the season, and that has continued. In fact, you tweeted this morning a list of the best MLB seasons by players age 24 or younger through 150 at-bats. Bellinger's on top of that list, ahead of guys like Mantle, Harper, McCovey, and Mays. What does that say about Cody Bellinger?
Well, Jim, certainly one parenthetical here is that we are in a very offensive year. This, the overall context of what he's doing is happening in a year where we've seen the ball flying. We all know that. We see that. But that takes, to me, nothing away from what he has done on the field and the historic quality of those numbers. I mean, they speak for themselves. We are talking about, Jim, one of the great seasons ever in the history of the game for a player his age and younger, and one could argue a player of any age, of any time. He's been that good. And I think, too, I'll share this story with you. The humility that he's got is impressive. There was a game that we did on Fox two Saturdays ago in Pittsburgh. It was rain delayed. The game ended after midnight Eastern time. It was like 12:16 in the morning by the time the game finally ended. And he stood on the field with me and waited through an entire commercial break to do an interview after the game live with me. And certainly there are other players that may have waited, but that stood out to me for a player who's at the absolute peak of his powers right now. He has never been hotter in the game than he is right now. It would have been very easy for him to say, you know what, it's late, I got to get back, I have to rest, or can we tape this? He said, no, I'll wait through the break, it's okay. So it tells you a lot about how easily he is accepting this level of attention, pressure, and how it has not changed him. I think he has remained humble. He, of course, grew up around the game through his father playing in the major leagues and playing for the Yankees, certainly, during that stretch of the Jeter years. So I thought that it was one little insight, Jim, but I think it really speaks to the man and who he is as a person that he was able to just have that presence of mind at really at a time when he was, I'm sure, very tired at the end of the night. It just said a lot to me, and I think explains partially how he's handling all the pressure and the tension so well.
That's true. I've done this a long time, John. You don't see that very often. John Morosi joining us. You know, another name, John, a young guy who's just absolutely killing it, and he may not be a household name yet, but he's going to appear on the program next hour. That's Tampa Bay's Austin Meadows. For those who do not know, just how good is he?
He is exceptional, and he also factors into that list, Jim, of the very best seasons that we've seen from a player of that age and younger. He's on that very same list in OPS, ahead of the likes of McCovey and Mays, and I've heard of both of them before. So he's in pretty unique company, just behind Bellinger, of course, with what he's done this year. And really, if you take away the time that he was injured, and if he had been healthy continuously, I don't think we'd be talking about him quite like we're talking about Bellinger, but it'd be close because the numbers are very similar. He arrived in Tampa Bay last summer in a trade with Pittsburgh. He was a key part of the Chris Archer deal that went back to Tampa Bay. And so I think the Rays, for a long time, Jim, they were very patient about moving Chris Archer. They wanted to make sure they got the right return, and their patience was rewarded because they got Tyler Glasnow, now who's been very good. Of course, he's injured now. Great start to the year. And then Austin Meadows, who just simply didn't really have a clear path to play in Pittsburgh. They've always had a lot of really good outfielders there. Gregory Polanco, Starling Marte, Andrew McCutchen before them. So he didn't quite have that opportunity, but an elite, young hitter from the Southeast, played a lot of baseball growing up, just a really well-developed young player, signed out of high school, and now is really flourishing and coming into his own. So the Rays were very patient. They were very wise to get him when they got him last year, Jim, and the Pirates, I'm sure, regretting on some level just how much they gave up to get Chris Archer. I had their GM, Neil Huntington, tell me, listen, we still love the fact that we've got Chris Archer, but the criticism about what I gave up is fair because I gave up a lot and certainly gave up perhaps even more than what the Pirates realized they had in Austin Meadows.
We are talking to John Morosi for a few more moments. All right, John, the 2019 MLB draft started last night. That's big news, but so is the fact that you can now sign Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrell without having to give up draft pick compensation. I know you spoke to Scott Boras about what he expects from Keuchel and whether or not he'll sign quickly. What was the response from his agent, and what do you make of that?
Well, Jim, it was a classic metaphorical Scott Boras quote, which he sometimes will do at this time of year. I asked him if he thought that Dallas Keuchel would sign quickly, and his response was, quote, "The wine has to decant," End quote. I'm not an Owenophile. I'm not really too aware of all the finer points of winemaking. But I think Scott was saying that it's going to take some time for the market to develop a bit there for Dallas in the coming days. Now that, as you point out, the draft pick compensation has gone away. My colleague today at MLB.com, Mark Feinsand, reported that the Yankees and Braves are the two favorites to sign Keuchel. I think a deal is possible this week based on what I've been told. The Cardinals as well are one more team that's been involved and interested. And, of course, Craig Kimbrell is out there now, and the draft pick no longer applies to him either. So his market is fully free, and Keuchel's is as well. I would imagine we'll see some signings in the next week. And Scott Boras also told me recently, Jim, that he believes that Keuchel could be ready to pitch in a major league game within a week of signing. Now, there are some baseball folks that dispute that, that think that it's going to take him a lot longer, that the simulated games he's been throwing are not adequate preparation to go right out there and pitch a major league game. But Scott is very confident that Dallas Keuchel's been throwing every fifth day there in Newport Beach at the Boras Sports Training Facility there on simulated action. So Scott thinks Dallas Keuchel's ready. I'm sure Dallas Keuchel feels Dallas Keuchel's ready, and now it's just a matter of lining up as the wine decants, Jim, over the coming days.
I was just going to say, John, I wonder if the wine has to decant from Kimbrel as well.
I think that on some level it does, although in the case of Kimbrel, relievers, I think he applies so broadly that I think that his market is going to be will be robust. There may be more teams involved on Kimbrel than Keuchel. Keuchel may well get more money and probably will because he's a starting pitcher. But I think there's probably broader interest in Kimbrel just because many contending clubs need a key late-inning reliever. The Cardinals are one example. The Phillies are another. I would say certainly the Braves are another option. The Cubs, who are saving some money now that Ben Zobrist is on the restricted list. So that's something Ken Rosenthal reported over the weekend about how the newfound spending power by the Cubs could potentially allow them to land Craig Kimbrel. So I think a lot of teams are involved there. The Twins have been linked actually to both players. The Twins, surprisingly in first place in the minds of some in the AL Central, now they may be looking to really take advantage of that opportunity that they've got and really boost their chances of advancing through October, and there's no better way to do it right now, Jim, than if you find a way to get Keuchel or Kimbrel.
Man, I'll tell you what, John, I am so disappointed that I don't have more time because I wanted to get into the history of Michigan's Upper Peninsula, something you were tweeting about, which included references to the Marquette Mining Journal, but I just don't think that we have time to give this the proper respect that it deserves. So if we can rain check that, and you can kind of file that away and remember that, we can go back to it.
I promise. Next time, a full discussion of the Toledo Strip and the trade for the UP. It's on my calendar.
That's what I'm saying. All right, so NHL Network's going to have live coverage, and that's before and after every game of the Stanley Cup Final. You can catch John on the game call of Yankees and Indians on Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern, on MLB Network Showcase as well. John, great to have you back. Thank you very much. I know you're really busy this time of year, but it's always good to talk to you.
Jim, my friend, I always love talking with you. You do such a great show. Love listening. And so whenever I'm on, it's a great honor for me. So thanks again for all you do, and keep up all the best work.
You too, John. Thanks so much. Really appreciate you. Great deal of respect and admiration for your work as well. MLB Network, NHL Network, Fox Sports, MLB Network Radio. And my man can, in fact, and he would have proven it had we had time, can break down why the Upper Peninsula is part of Michigan and would have done it if we had time. All right, so let me set up the third hour for you. 1-800-636-8686. Got a few guys calling in with some advice on cryptocurrency, which is good. I said Bitcoin, not coin collecting. Next hour, the aforementioned Austin Meadows. When we come back, I've got a smack-off player profile. Mike in Indy. Stay tuned.